On today's edition of Silver Screen News, we go comic book crazy because we've got news about Fantastic Four, we've got news about Venom, we've got news about Comic-Con, and we got some sad news about Indiana Jones as well.
And, of course, we go back 10 years, 20 years, and 30 years for Throwback Thursday.
Hello, everyone. It is me, Nico Luro, and we are back once again a little bit sooner since our last news show, but we explained on the last episode that there was some stuff that happened which made us do a news show later last week, so obviously it's coming sooner this week. But yes, here we are with the news. I'm Nico, he's AJ, and we're ready to talk about a lot of interesting, weird news stories. There's not going to be any last week's news because that was covered a few days ago, so we're just going to jump straight into it with our hot off the press section. Done. Yes. What are we starting with today? We've got some good stuff. We're starting with something sad. We are going to be starting with the continuing box office decline. And in this case, we're not talking about The Flash, although, my God, that had another decline. Oof. We're going to be talking about Indiana Jones this week. Because Indy 5 opened. I sadly was supposed to go and see it, but didn't have a chance. But it has not done well at the box office, AJ. Here's the full story. Can you see this here? Yes, no?
Still loaded up at the minute.
There we go. Box office, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny stumbles with a $60 million debut. Disney's Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny lassoed the top spot on domestic box office charts, collecting an underwhelming $60 million in its opening weekend. It's a decent amount of money for a tentpole that's aimed at older audiences, but Indiana Jones 5, one of the most expensive movies ever, costing $295 million before marketing. It'll take a heroic feat, one that would test even an enduring legend like Indiana Jones, for the fifth installment in the decades-old franchise to become profitable in its theatrical one. It was a disappointing weekend at the box office. I'm not going to read that part. That's other movies which we're not talking about. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, the final adventure to star Harrison Ford as the swashbuckling explorer, also added $70 million at the international box office for a global start of $130 million. For context, that's worse than The Flash, which misfired with $75 million internationally and $139 million globally, and cost $100 million less to make. So that's alarming. Really, really alarming. AJ, would you care to give a spin, a stab at why you think people are just not going to see movies at the moment?
People aren't going to see movies at a moment, which is always going to be a heartbreaker, always going to be a bit of a problem. The other thing is, it's franchises that shouldn't still be franchises. And with the highest of respect and love to Harrison Ford and Indiana Jones, it's a disconnected era. You're looking at us as a slightly older generation as those that are going to rush to it. And we were very much, very much disappointed by Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. So you're always as good as your last movie. Your hero is beyond believable, respectfully. It just doesn't seem convincing. I've spoken to a few people who have said it, that they had to fight people to go with them to see it. And I don't know if they've actually gone to see it yet. Yourself, it's also been a delay. I'm not saying that stopped you because, oh, it's indie, life gets in the way, I'm sure. Yes, we are going through a cost of living crisis, but you need something fresh. Yes, there is a decline. I guarantee you, the way I'm hearing people talk, Barbie's going to do well. But then I suppose people were talking about The Flash and it hasn't done too well. I am slightly concerned, but I don't know. The hesitancy I had and people around me have had doesn't make me shocked at the news that Indiana Jones hasn't been as great as it should be. But it's a gone era, I personally believe, respectfully.
There's one thing I'm going to add to this, actually, just before I give my take on this, because something very interesting, we reported on this, I think, 2 weeks ago when those scores came out of Cannes, right? And you know, it was a gamble by Disney to put that movie in front of one of the most notorious and difficult to please audiences and critics and group of critics there is by putting it on at Cannes. Now, when it came out at Cannes, it walked away with 55% audience score. What's interesting, if I open up Rotten Tomatoes right now, let me just bring this up. Because now that people are seeing it in the cinema, the scores have gone up from both critics and audiences. So bearing in mind, key thing to remember, 55% was the score on Rotten Tomatoes for Indiana Jones after Cannes, right? Mm-hmm. Let me bring up Rotten Tomatoes here. So here we go. As you can see, the audience score, which is usually higher than critic scores, but the audience score is 88%. The critic score has jumped from 55 up to 69. It's now certified fresh. So here's what I'm going to add to this, having that little nugget in mind. If people are really still in doubt about the power of critics, and people are so quick to dismiss critics and to dismiss the word of critics and say, oh, their opinion is not more valid than mine, which it is because it's more informed. Indiana Jones, I was on a very small island of people who thought that this movie didn't look good when the trailers arrived, right? A lot of people disagreed with me, and a lot of people were really, really excited about Indy 5. Oh my God, after Cannes, that win got taken out the sales. And it's hard to recover from that, because even now, with both audience and critic scores high, especially the audience score, like, people enjoy this movie, it's still opening to low numbers. And it's, you know, you mentioned Barbie a moment ago. Barbie is going to do bucks. I'm going to go on a record and say, I think Barbie is going to outperform Oppenheimer. Genuinely, I think Barbie will do bigger numbers than Nolan's new movie, right? I think Barbie may do bigger numbers than Mission Impossible. But the reason I'm bringing these movies up are these are the movies that Indy 5 has now got to compete with within the next 2 to 3 weeks. Oppenheimer, Barbie, and the new Mission Impossible. I think it's doomed to fail, sadly, with what it's open to. 300 million before even factoring in marketing, it would have to make between 600 to 700 million just to break even. This movie's going to be a flop. There's no two ways about it. And that sucks. It's painful because, contrary to what reports were at Cannes, the movie's apparently not as bad as all that. Thoughts? Anything else to add on this?
Look, it's always a tough one. It's always something that you hope for the best. And we've seen it ourselves, and, you know, a lot of people might be okay. Oh, that's what the Rotten Tomatoes are saying. What's this one saying? What's IMDb saying? What's, you know, there are a list of different outlets out there. I would like it to do well for the people. No, listen, I'm just going off different sources out there. Metateric, you know, there are a lot of people out there. But what I'm saying is it's tough. I always want to see a film do well because it's good to know cinemas going out there. It's good to know that there's something doing well that's good so you can go out and enjoy it. That's the key thing, you know. We don't talk movies just because we talk movies. We talk it because we love it. And you'd like to see stuff out there. It's sad. I do believe, though, certain IPs have just had their date. And I believe that's the sad thing about this one. Mission Impossible may be a product of that as well. Oppenheimer, I think, has a select crowd. Those who appreciate cinema, who will refer to Nolan, will go back for it and chase it. Barbie is, as much as it's an age-old IP, it's something fresh that people... It's not like it's old, like Barbie 6. It's the latest Barbie, you know? We're approaching Mission Impossible, what, 8 now? You know? Certain things have got a touch.
6 or 7, I think, yeah. No, it might be 8. You might be right, you know. I'm not sure.
Between 7 to 8, yeah, you know. And this is where I think certain franchises are taking a hit. Certain things appeal to a specific market, and others are just mass. You know, Barbie has blockbuster written all over it. Indiana is an adventurer's dream, but it's just slightly past it. How are we meant to convince the next generation that gentleman, and I swear to God, it hurts me to be that guy to say this stuff, but that gentleman is the one to be the ultimate swashbuckling hero for a film. You're like, really?
No,
I know no. if you tried to sell me Clint Eastwood back in the day, I'd have been like, okay, that's exactly what's happening here with Harrison Ford.
Agreed. 100% agreed. But it's not all doom and gloom. Little Mermaid has very quietly gone about its business, making a lot of money. Mario Bros. Joined the $1 billion club this summer. Guardians did 800 million. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is continuing to do really good at the box office. So I think the biggest story here is that people are clearly being more selective about what they're seeing. And it's, in a weird way, almost refreshing not to see people rushing out to the big, obvious, tried and tested IP and, I guess, demanding something more. Maybe I'm projecting. Yeah. But the question is, it goes over to you guys. What have you seen this weekend? Were you one of the people who saw ND5? What did you think of it? Why do you think it has underperformed at the box office? Leave your thoughts and your comments down below, please. And with all that, let's talk Fantastic Four, AJ, because we've got two stories revolving around Fantastic Four. Let's bring up the first one.
Okay.
And the first one is, so everyone thought that the shoe-in for Reed Richards, for Mr. Fantastic, Stretchy McStretcherson, was John Krasinski. You and me have often believed that what they did in Doctor Strange 2 was fan service. You know, it was like, oh, you guys were here. You can have him for one. I actually think Krasinski's going to end up directing Fantastic Four, not starring in. And obviously, a lot of people have now been nominated. A lot of people have been in the running. And at the front of that pack has been Adam Driver. But if rumors are to be believed, Adam Driver may have priced himself out of Fantastic Four. This comes from comingsoon.net. So Adam Driver was reportedly offered the role of Reed Richards in the upcoming Fantastic Four movie. However, a new report suggests that he may no longer be in contention. During the latest episode of the Hot Mic podcast, Above the Line's Jeff Snyder, the same guy, as a side note, who mentioned that we were definitely getting a live action Zelda movie, but then who also, it turned out the next week, we were not getting a live action Zelda movie. So take this with a pinch of salt. But Above the Line's Jeff Snyder mentioned that with a lot of these castings, it might come down to money, and speculated the Driver might have priced himself out of the role. When I asked someone about Fantastic Four, they said, like I said, it comes down to money. So I think Adam Driver may have priced himself out, Snyder said. That may have been the situation. He may have just started asking for too much money. Driver's name has come up in regards to the role previously. Snyder recently shared information during a past episode of the Hot Mic podcast that Driver is in the lead to play the role, a report that Snyder said he couldn't verify but made sense to him. So, we now come to the interesting part of, one, Snyder's a scoop master, right? So he's got, sometimes he gets it right, sometimes he gets it wrong. He's like the Dave Meltzer of the movie world, right, Jeff Snyder? So the question is, what would you think of Adam Driver in the role of Reed Richards? And do you buy the fact that he's actually gone? And who would you cast if he is gone? Triple threat for you today, AJ. Have some fun with that.
That is a lot to work with. I'm going to start off with, do I believe he's gone? Possibly. It's a weak answer. It's possibly. But do I blame him for outpricing himself? No. The Fantastic Four have had 3 to 4 attempts, and not one of them has been a winner. So if I am going to potentially ruin my career, you know what? Let me play the game and get paid for it. You know, that's the fact. Also, let's remember, he can say it. I'm Kylo Ren. Like, the latest Star Wars trilogy really had him as a strong focus, so name your price. If that means he's out, fair play. Who would I like to see in this role of Reed Richards? Let's go back to someone who we said could have been Lex Luthor, but we didn't really picture it. Nicholas Holt could be an interesting shoo-in for the role of Reed Richards. It's not something I thought of off the bat of my head, but now just looking at someone who could be in that role, I actually think he'd be someone who could pull it off quite well. Am I projecting the fact that he was Hank McCoy? Possibly. I didn't think of it at the time, but now I'm like, well, he played the Doctor quite well there, which kind of kills it, because if they are to, God knows what Deadpool will bring in. that might be an issue. But had we, in a world where that isn't an option, I think Nicholas Holt would be quite a good Reed Richards. And what was the third question?
We can go with that. That's fine. We can go with that. That's
Okay,
fine.
cool.
I completely believe that he's priced himself out. I fully believe this report. I question the sense of it, though, because he's definitely become a household name, Adam Driver. He's worked with the biggest directors in the world, Scorsese, Ridley Scott. He's done bits. But, you know, when he was given a solo outing recently, Adam Driver in the Dinosaur movie, that movie flopped hard. So he's not really a box office draw, although I do think he's beloved. Who would I get to play Reed Richards? Funnily enough, there's one guy that comes to mind, and that's Austin Butler. I think he'd be an awesome Reed Richards. I have seen that guy now lead a movie, although I wasn't the biggest fan of what was the Elvis movie again, remind me? Was it just Elvis? Yes, Elvis.
Elvis.
Yeah, although I wasn't the biggest fan of Elvis, he held the screen really, really well. And I could do, would I believe that Austin Butler could be the smartest man in the room? Yeah, hell yeah. So he'd probably be who I go with. There have been
Can I have a
rumors of,
question?
please.
Does he not give you more of a Johnny Storm than Reed Richards?
Both are fine. I would accept both those answers. I would absolutely love both those answers.
Okay.
Austin Butler as Johnny Storm would work. Austin Butler as Reed Richards would also work for me. Now, there have been rumors of Dev Patel being in the running for Reed Richards. Now, do I believe that Dev Patel could be the smartest man in the room? Yes, I do. But oh my God, can I see the hellfire and brimstone arriving if you cast an Indian or a Central Asian ethnic guy to play a white guy? Just look what happened with the Little Mermaid, for Christ's sake. You change religion, you change ethnicity now, you are bringing along problems with that. And frankly, I think Disney have enough problems than having to worry about the extremities of both political leanings. You know, the people who will on TikTok scream, "You neckbeard racist," if someone doesn't want Dev Patel to be Reed Richards, versus the people who say, "An Indian guy playing Reed Richards? F no to that." Like, both of these answers are wrong. Like, that's the terrible thing. So why would you invite that type of negativity onto your production? That would be my only reason for saying no to Dev. But would I see him as the smartest guy in the room? Yes, I would. I definitely would. But yeah, that's kind of the story for Johnny, not Johnny Storm. You've put that in my head now.
Reed
For
Richards.
Reed Richards, the question is, what do you guys think? Who would you cast as Reed Richards? Please don't say John Krasinski. Tried, tested, and boring. Moving on. Who would you cast as Reed Richards? And do you believe that Adam Driver's gone? Like, please do remember to like this video and leave your thoughts and your comments down below. And staying in the realm of Fantastic Four, AJ. So, I would argue the more interesting casting, which is Sue Storm, because you can have a lot of fun with this. There's a lot of fun to be had with this. But we have apparently got a more or less kind of semi sort of maybe confirmed casting for Sue Storm, and that is Vanessa Kirby reportedly has the offer for Sue Storm. This comes to us from CBR.com, who have said Marvel Studios has reportedly offered Vanessa Kirby the role of Sue Storm, Invisible Woman, in Fantastic Four. According to reliable insider Daniel Rickman, Kirby, who can be seen in the upcoming Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, has been officially offered the role of Invisible Woman. No deal has been finalized yet, but the gig is reportedly hers for the taking. Kirby is best known for playing a young Princess Margaret, Countess of Snowdon, in the Netflix drama series The Crown, and Hattie Shaw in the 2009 film Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw. Kirby's potential casting comes after Margot Robbie reportedly exited talks for the highly coveted role. Robbie, who has previous experience in the comic book realm, having played Harley Quinn in the DC Extended Universe, was seemingly a lock for Invisible Woman alongside Adam Driver as her husband, Mr. Fantastic. However, both actors are no longer circling the feature, with salary being listed as one of their departures. David Diggs, who is reportedly in talks to play The Thing, is also not 100% attached to Fantastic Four anymore, with all roles currently, quote, in a flux. I can't help hear flux and think Aeon Flux, but that's just me. So, AJ, Vanessa Kirby, I'd like your thoughts on her. What do you think of this casting?
So it's a bit unfair because the only thing I've actually seen her in is Hobbs and Shaw. So yeah. I didn't have a problem with her. I know I appreciate the film a bit more than you do. So it's not anything to like really kill me. It can work. I can't put like mega excitement because the nature of Hobbs and Shaw has not allowed me to see major diversity. She was just meant to be the sister clashing with the brother, really a love interest to the brother's biggest nemesis, short of the villain, obviously. So I haven't seen enough range, but then to know that she's also been in The Crown, I'm guessing it's got good scope and she's a talented individual. So I'm open to the idea, if I'm honest. There's nothing to tell me no. I can't recall watching Hobbs and Shaw and thinking, get this lady off my screen. So there's nothing for me to be negative about, and I'm open. I've not watched The Crown, so it's something that's on my radar because I heard it's a really good series, if I'm honest. So yeah, bring it on. If we've got someone, it just brings us one step closer to the Fantastic Four being an actual real project. Why would I complain?
I don't believe this report. I do not believe this report for a moment. I am still believing that Jodie Comer is going to be cast as Sue Storm. She of Killing Eve fame, she who was in the last, yeah, she who was in The Last Duel with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon and Adam Driver, funnily enough. But I think this role's Comer's for the taking. I think we're being worked here. I don't believe this for a moment. I think there's some negotiation. This is pure speculation. I don't have a report to confirm this or anything. But when I heard that Jodie Comer was in the running for the role, I now just see her as Sue Storm. I can't look beyond her. No disrespect to Vanessa Kirby. I really like her. But I see this role being Jodie Comer's. I'm actually very happy they didn't give it to Margot Robbie because Margot's kind of like Keanu. You kind of just see her now, don't you? So, oh, look, it's Margot Robbie. You know, it's like when you see Stan Lee in a Marvel movie. It's nice to see Stan Lee, but it takes you out.
But she's also too linked to Harley, that I know. Yeah. If you, I kind of feel not that you should be like, once you're affiliated to one brand, if you're so deep invested, like, let's be honest, out of all things that have happened, Suicide Squad and Birds of Prey, that was the one consistent. It's been Margot Robbie throughout. Everybody else got changed. She was there. Now to just mysteriously be like, oh, yeah, we have to take a serious to Sue Storm. I'm not overly sold on that.
I agree.
Yeah, Jodie Comer is a good one. Anya Taylor-Joy would be another good one.
ATJ, yeah. Anya Taylor-Joy.
While I'm looking at potential candidates. Yeah. But yeah, let's bring it on. I'm not. Yeah. Yeah.
Question goes over to you guys. Who would you cast as Sue Storm? Do you believe, would you prefer Vanessa Kirby, Margot Robbie, or Jodie Comer as your pick for Sue Storm? Leave your thoughts in the comments down below. And we move on to our next story. And it's more depression regarding the Hollywood writers' strike and the potential upcoming Screen Actors Guild striking. So, here it is. Another major studio drops out of San Diego Comic-Con as strike by actors is still possible. Now, we got to remember, do you recall, obviously, last week when we talked about, you know, the casting of Superman and Lois Lane, obviously, yeah? One thing came to mind, which I didn't actually remember to bring up on the podcast. It kind of came to me after we'd hit stop. It's like, hang on, Comic-Con's around the corner. Why in the blue hell would they announce this now and not at Comic-Con? Surely that would make more sense. And then here you go. There's a risk of having an actor strike, because what are you going to do? You're going to arrive at the at Comic-Con and be like, we found our Superman, but we can't bring them out. We found our Lois Lane, but we can't bring them out. We're here to talk about Aquaman 2, but we can't bring out Jason Momoa. We're here to talk about Blue Beetle and show you some footage, but we can't bring out the lead whose name I don't know and should know. But so DC are now amongst many studios who have dropped out of Comic-Con this year. Here's the full story. So Warner Bros. Own DC seemed to be positioned to shine with Marvel's absence this year. DC's co-CEO James Gunn confirmed to a fan on Instagram, though, that he is not going. The hits keep coming for Comic-Con International as another Hollywood studio has decided to skip, reports the Los Angeles Times. Warner Bros. Own DC Studios, rival to Marvel Studios, which is not coming this year, will also bow out. The studio that produces Batman and Superman films was initially thought by some to take advantage of Marvel's absence. James Gunn, co-chief executive of DC Studios, responded to a fan's question on Instagram Saturday that he would not be at Comic-Con this year, but probably in 2024. Additionally, DC has released its initial schedule for the convention, which leaves off a big Hall H appearance. None of the studios skipping Comic-Con have released statements about why they aren't coming, but industry experts say it is a result of the writers' strike and possible actors' strike. The thinking is it wouldn't make a lot of sense to spend thousands of dollars or more on a major Comic-Con appearance if the actors of the films can't come out on stage. Studios are hedging their bets, said Jonathan Handel, an entertainment attorney and journalist, about actors not attending. The Screen Actors Guild agreed to an extension of its contract last week, which was due to expire until July 12th. If the actors go on strike, they can't appear for promotional events. Handel said it's increasingly clear that actors will not be at Comic-Con because it typically takes the union 3 to 4 weeks to ratify a new contract. So even if a deal is reached by July 12th, it won't be done in time for the convention. However, he said it's possible the union could approve a waiver to allow actors to do promotions during the voting process. And it goes on and on and on. But if we talk about the studios that are not attending, AJ, we've got DC not attending, Marvel, Lucasfilm, Universal, Paramount, Sony, Disney. The only ones who are kind of Netflix are not attending. The only ones who are kind of we don't know about are Apple Plus and Amazon Prime, Amazon Studios. But dude, what's your take on this? What has to be done to get the world ticking again?
Do you know, I think it's a good thing. It sucks for anyone who's bought a ticket to Comic Con. I actually don't wish on anyone to get let down on that. You know, if I finally bought my ticket to Comic Con and I heard that, it would be a heartbreaker. You know, like you had similar with like The Rock potentially turned up at WrestleMania, and that's a conflict schedule. But the main thing behind this is if you're going to strike, it's kind of like a train strike in the UK. You do it when you're out to inconvenience people. And if you need to show the impact of who I am and who what I am, it's all good saying something and, you know, having a writer's strike. And, you know, instead of 25 episodes, we're down to 13 episodes for this season because that's all that was written or this is what was there. When people actually, because everyone hears it, but no one's really been interrupted. Your shows still go on. There are ways that you can still see it. But when you're now at Comic-Con and there is no big excitement, that grand reveal is not there. You're not seeing a list of 25 movies being dished out, and this is phase five and six for Marvel. This is what James Gunn has in line for DC. This is your new Batman. Just the one, not all six of them. But you know, whichever way you want to go about it, you're now at a point where people are like, I support these actors. You're going to get pissed off. You know, you are going to get wound to that degree of, oh my days, how can you do this to me? But you're
That's
either
the
going to take
point.
one way or the other, and now these people are going to go and say, "Look at the feet, look at the kickback, give us what we need. Go AI, go AI me, go AI your cast." Go AI your cast on that stage for Comic-Con. It's not going to happen. So respect who I am and respect what I do. And that union between actors and writers keeps the tradition of cinema intact and avoids the AI takeover.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. You know, there's one thing I think people need to start remembering or indeed realizing if they don't already. The writing is not a pre-production only thing. Yes, you need your script before you go into production, but the writers are there every step of the way throughout production. They've got to do rewrites. They've got to do script updates. If there's something that isn't working, they've got to redo pages on the fly. Like, the writers are such an integral part to the successful production of the movie. It's not just a, here's my script, it's written, goodbye, moving on to the next. It doesn't work like that. So it's really good that the writers are standing up for themselves and, you know, knowing their worth, frankly. But it is frustrating, the situation, isn't it? Because the one thing I find very sad is that, here's an interesting fact. Since Aquaman, not a single DC film has made over 400 million. How crazy is that? Not Wonder Woman 1984. Not the Fabulous Emancipation of Harley Quinn, not Suicide Squad, not Black Adam, not Shazam 2, certainly not The Flash. Like, and I, as I mentioned last week, I think that's going to continue with Blue Beetle. I don't think Aquaman 2 is going to be such a bomb, but it's not making $1 billion again because people know that it's irrelevant. We've moved on from it now. So if ever there was two movies that needed a little propping up, a screen test, something to get the audience excited, 20-minute showing, God, it was these two movies. And it's genuinely a shame that they look like they're going to flop. And not being at Comic-Con does not help. But that's my two cents on all this. Anything to add?
Just because the focus does have a strong focus on James Gunn there, and I'm aware he writes as well as directs and produces, I just hope that the relationship with him and DC is still strong. And I know that sounds like a really weird, random, out of nowhere call, but yes. I'm also going back to that statement that you made previously where the choice of Superman was not his. You know,
correct.
You know, something that's been in the running before. Now, when you take those kind of elements in place and you're saying that this is the man to front the new phase, start off everything for a kick, and he doesn't even have a pick of the arguably biggest name in comic book history, you just want to make sure everything's in place. You hear that, then you hear he's not turning up. It's like,
And I, yeah, hope. Listen, I think that's a very good point. I do inherently trust in what's going on over at Warner Brothers at the moment. I think David Zaslav, since he's taken over, has made all the right moves of which movies to axe, which series to axe, which movies to give a release to, which directors to support, moving away from same-day releases on streaming and cinema. He's done all the right things. We are grading on a curve because it was so bad under AT&T that Christopher Nolan walked away. And, you know, they're kind of doing their kiss and make up tour at the moment, trying to get Nolan back, trying to get Peter Jackson back on board. Zaslav is doing all the right things. So I'd like to think that maybe they pitch Corin Sweat to him going, hey, we've been looking at this guy, and James Gunn met him and went, actually, he's good. Yes, let's have him. I really hope it's as just simple as that. But let's not be under any illusion. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say this. Maybe I'll go vertical for this one, just to make a point. This Superman Legacy movie is single-handedly the most important comic book movie since Iron Man came out. You have got the entire future of a franchise solely dependent on your shoulders. Because I've said it before, if Superman Legacy comes out and doesn't make money, that's not the problem. As long as it's good, like really, really good, and word of mouth gets out, because then you become as strong as your last movie. Your last movie was really good. You create an avalanche effect, you know, a snowball effect. that movie was good, and we now start on an upward trajectory. If Superman Legacy comes out and it's bad, money irrelevant. If it's bad and the stink of that movie starts the DCU off that way, the DCU is dead on arrival. This movie is the most important movie since Iron Man, in my opinion.
You may not be wrong. You may not be wrong. I know DC are in a stronger place, but this could be their Blade, if we're going to be honest, where Blade saved Marvel. You know, it's not even the case of a universe. It's a case of the franchise. I know DC will forever make money, but that could be the end of people just wanting to do anything for it. It either kicks it off or it kills it. You're not wrong. And can I be honest? I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical.
So
and it's
much.
Sad to think that DC have left us. DC have put us in that kind of position. You know, you've given me a cast that makes me feel like you're giving me Smallville too. It feels like it should be something on the CW as opposed to the big screen. And I could be so wrong. These people might knock it right out of the park. And I swear to you, I hope for that. But it just doesn't have big match feels to it. It doesn't feel like, yeah, we're going in hard. DC Marvel chose Robert Downey Jr. Troubled actor, but recognizable name. Do you see where I'm going with this? You're now taking your biggest star and you're saying, this is who I've got. And again, no disrespect to the actors in place, just me being honest. And I know that I am a bit old school in my names and I'm still learning a few names out there. Sometimes I'm Googling and I'm hitting, you know, let's go back to Sue Storm. I just said, I've known her from one show. I don't know her from anything else. Maybe I need to brush up a bit, but yeah, if you're going to go hard, go hard. Like
Rachel Brosnan,
you look at your histories of people who have played Batman. What's that say?
Rachel Brosnan, I think, is a very, very good bit of casting. You know, this is someone who's won BAFTAs, who's won Emmys. She's a proven commodity. Corin Sweat. Like, I know people are already pretending online. Like, I've been following this guy since he was 15. He's great. Shut up. Shut up. These are the same people who said, yeah, I knew who Guardians of the Galaxy were. Liar. Lies.
I'm just saying, we've never had an unknown play Batman. Now, if you're trying to kick off your universe with your biggest name,
well,
again, I just put my hands up.
Just remember, Mr. Mum was cast as Batman, yeah?
Yes, I get that, but he was still known. He was still known.
Not as an action star, but yes. You're right. This guy
is. Gambles are gambles, but you can be.
Too much an unknown, yeah.
Yeah. That's all
I've got. We'll see what happens. It's very interesting.
We see what happens.
Do you guys agree that Superman Legacy is the most important comic book movie to come out since Iron Man? Let me know. Let us know. Leave your thoughts and your comments down below. And our last news story today, before we get old. Our very last news story.
Oh, dear.
Venom 3 is a thing, AJ. It's actually happening, and yeah, we have some imagery for it. So, new Venom 3 set video. This title is kind of nonsense, but it says spoils major MCU Spider-Man connection. It doesn't, but here we go. A new video from Venom 3 confirmed a big connection to the MCU's Spider-Man. The third installment of the Tom Hardy-led series just started production in Cartagena, Colombia, with the first images from the project set showing off decorations for the Day of the Dead, which is obviously Mexican, but they're not filming in Mexico. Another video called of Hardy on set also revealed that the movie seems to start immediately following the events of Let There Be Carnage, with the titular anti-hero on the run after his clash with Cletus Cassidy. At the end of Venom's sequel, while relaxing at a resort off the grid, Hardy's Eddie Brock is suddenly transported from this universe to the MCU due to Doctor Strange's awry spell. He's only there briefly before being sent back to his home timeline in the post-credit scene of Spider-Man No Way Home. Thanks to Twitter user Almup G80. Good name. A new set video from Venom 3 revealed a massive MCU Spider-Man connection that will carry over into the sequel. The small detail in question is the t-shirt that Tom Hardy's Eddie Brock is wearing. For those looking close enough, one might notice that the shirt matches what the character wore in the post-credit tags for both Venom Let There Be Carnage and Spider-Man No Way Home, specifically the city logo from the NBA's Golden State Warriors. The attire suggests that Venom 3 will be set immediately after the events of No Way Home, when Eddie is zapped back into his own universe. Tom Hardy also shared a photo on Instagram from the production, which provides another small glimpse at the shirt in question. The set video can also be seen below. I mean, I've played the video. It's literally just him walking up a street. There's nothing fancy in it. Sadly, it's unlikely anything involving Tom Holland's Spider-Man will be part of Venom 3. Despite many teases, there will be no confirmation that Tom Hardy will actually come face-to-face with the MCU's webhead. After all, if something that big were a part of the movie, the news would almost certainly have hit the web at this point. I don't agree with that, but anyway. However, given that the film seemingly picks up immediately after the No Way Home post-credits, it'll be hard for the movie not to talk about the multiversal elephant in the room. With his recent experience in mind, perhaps the multiverse elements of the character will come into the spotlight this time round. Maybe Sony had more reason than just No Way Home for bringing up Venom's multiversal hive mind. Alternative realities could also be the perfect direction to go if Sony wants its Venom to interact with some version of Spider-Man outside of Marvel Studios' jurisdiction. Venom 3 is currently aiming for a release window of October 2024. So hopefully that's far enough to not be too screwy with the writer's strike. But AJ, I guess the big question is, do you believe that we're going to get any Spider-Man in Venom 3?
No, not at all. I'll be honest. What you will get is a post-credit. You will get a post-credit. The film will just have you thinking what's going on, and it has nothing to it. Let's be honest, for all the hype that we had when we saw Venom teleported to a different dimension, we were all excited. Watched Far From Home from beginning to end, and also was a post-credit of him going back. No Way Home, sorry. You know, so what is now leading me to believe that Spider-Man and Venom are going to finally clash? Personally, you're going to have this film go on to be what it is. And I know that it's going to be like in the post-credit. Oh, yeah. Remember that small bit of residue that was left over in the other world? That's that. And it's just going to remind you and continuously tease that these two worlds are going to clash. But I believe that what we had was just a gateway to enable Venom to enter the MCU. But he's a different universe. This Venom can't work with Spider-Man because they're both good guys. What are we looking at? It's unfortunate. It was my biggest dream for the biggest while. But the fact that No Way Home gave me no chance of seeing it, I lost all hope. Correct me if I'm wrong. I truly believe that the only way we're seeing it is in the post-credit world. Nothing more.
I'll go one better. I don't even think we're seeing it in a post-credit world. I think the only reason for bringing Venom into the MCU for that brief moment where he talked to Danny Rojas, shout out to Ted Lasso, if you know, you know, was to make sure that we had the symbiote in the MCU. That's it. Just so we can have Peter in the black suit. I reckon in Spider-Man 4, you're going to see Tom Holland in the black suit, and he's going to be all dark and emo. Just don't do the dark emo dance. That's all I ask for. I don't think this is much of a story. The only thing I really hope is that we don't get yet another symbiote fight in Venom 3. I don't know which direction they're going in. Maybe Venom 3 is when they start to bring all of this villain universe they've been creating together. Maybe we see Kraven. Maybe we see Morbius. Maybe we see Vulture. Who knows? But we need to start seeing something come from this because it's directionless at the moment. But it goes over to you guys. What do you think is going on with Venom 3? Do you think we're ever going to see Spider-Man in this Sony-verse? Still owned by Sony. Crazy to think we're not seeing Spider-Man in his own universe, but that world we live in. So do you think we're seeing Tom Holland or a Spider-Man in the Sony-verse or not? Leave your thoughts and your comments down below. And like and share if you haven't already. Also subscribe. that kind of does it for the news stories, AJ. Which means it's time. It is time to feel old as we bring it to Throwback Thursday Movies. God damn it, God damn it, God damn it.
Okay. Get your hashtags up. Get your hashtags up because we're about to go back 10, 20, 30 years.
Yes. Okay. I've seen two of these movies. So I'm hoping you've seen the 30-year-old one. I know of it in name only, sadly. So I'm hoping you've got me covered on this one. So it's a big name, though, but we'll get to that. 10 years old. It's a funny one this week. The one that's 10 years old seems like it's 10, and the one that's 30 very much seems like it's 30. The one that's 20 made me go, WTF, how? But 10 years old, starring Johnny Depp and Armie Hammer, who we can't really talk about anymore, Lone Ranger.
Oh, gosh. on my birthday, no less, July 3rd. disappointment. That's all I feel of that film. I'm not going to say I watched 101 episodes of The Lone Ranger as a TV show or what have you, but The Lone Ranger's always been kind of cool to me. Plus, I like the connection that he was like the great grand uncle or something to the Green Hornet, which also happened to be a disappointment. So the family legacy continued in the world of film. They were great TV. Was that sorry?
I actually didn't know that connection. Fair play.
Yeah, it's meant to be his great grand uncle. But this goes back to your radio TV series, but they are connected. But TV shows. I love The Green Hornet. Then occasional episodes of The Lone Ranger. The film was a letdown, and it hurt me for many reasons. One, because I wanted to go in depth with The Lone Ranger. I thought this would be a good way to learn this, the entire story from beginning, and let's move on. And then the follow-up, because Captain Hit and Miss definitely delivered a miss on this one. Johnny Depp, it just didn't hit. And I think what has happened with Johnny Depp, and Johnny Depp is such a great actor, but because of what he was able to do with Jack Sparrow, everyone believes that Johnny Depp now has to just be quirky in his role. Now, let's not talk about the cultural appropriation of Johnny Depp playing Tonto.
Right.
That's an entire different conversation in itself. That's there. But he just had to play quirky. When you know, Tonto, very much like Kato, is someone who was quite serious and knew the game. We just had this quirky character that just really put me off the film so much that I can admit I've not finished the film. I just thought, this isn't for me. It's just not working. It just didn't hit the bat. And again, this Johnny Depp thing goes to him and Charlie in the Chocolate Factory. You know, everything just didn't hit right after. Sorry, I had something else completely in my head. It wouldn't even make sense in the link. But after Pirates of the Caribbean, they just tried to cash in on something that wasn't to be cashed in that way. Use the man as the great actor that he is. They didn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very much of your opinion. I mean, if you look at who's cast, or indeed what they're cast as, OMG, this movie has aged badly, because you've got one guy who's literally been eradicated from Hollywood for some choice human fetishes, should we say. And you've got another dude who is looking for a career revival after the Amber Heard trial, which everyone was like, oh, good, now he'll get his dues. That hasn't really happened. And this was definitely one of his many, many career faux pas. As you said, cultural misappropriation. It's like, Johnny, what were you thinking?
Like, can I also just go back to last week?
Sorry to cut. Yeah.
This, people, is the difference between Robert Downey Jr. blackfacing for the entire part of the role because it meant something versus someone who is not meant to be in that role.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
100% correct.
But yeah,
100% correct. Very, very well said. Good for you. And 20 years old, AJ. This one just made me go, what the hell? But oh Jesus, 20 years old from a franchise that you and me both really like, at least the early entries. And this, I would say, was probably the last okay to good one. Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines wow. is 20. Yeah.
I mean, can I be honest? Terminator is a duology to me. This was the start of the end. It's not that it was a bad film.
No, this was okay. This was okay.
It was okay. This is what it was. It was okay. You know, they. It's when we realized that the T-1000 is forever to be replicated in every other Terminator movie. It's, yes, liquid metal is going to be a thing. Morphine is going to be a thing. It's just the yes. way of it now. Like, we've created something, we are not letting it go. And guess what? We're trying, but we can't up it. We gave you the best form of villain. We went from cyborg to mutated cyborg. We're done. I'm sorry. And that has been the ongoing problem with Terminator. It just yep. seems to be copy, repeat, copy, paste, copy, paste, copy, paste. So was it a good film? It was very interesting to have a female be the lead villain. You know, it was something fresh. Mm-hmm. Like, ooh. And she owned it. I'm not saying she didn't.
Christina Loken's cool. I like her. And then she went yeah, and worked with Uwe Boll.
On many occasions, that's why I didn't even want to mention her name, because I didn't want to bring up the Uwe Boll stuff, because I can't be like, and after that, she went on to great movies. No, 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 it was Uwe Boll. So I was just like,
went in the blood rain.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, it was an average movie, but this is the problem. You've gone from a film, and I, you know, earlier said we can't just base it all on Rotten Tomatoes, but you've got one film that's rated 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, followed by possibly, arguably, Arnie's biggest film of all time. And then you've got this. You are really batting against two of the hardest films to follow up against. And you just could, it's not your fault. You can only be what you are. You are the Tokyo Drift of of the series. You're like, agreed by some, but you're not great. So
do be yeah, nice about Tokyo Drift. How dare you?
No, but I'm saying it's the one that you can appreciate, but you know, it's good. It's just not great. And that was the problem. And after that, they went from they're bad, just not terrible. It's terrible, just not the pit. It's the pit, but it's Genesis. You know, that's what happened with Terminator. And this was just the start of the decline.
Can I ask how the hell you knew that the Terminator was 100% on Rotten Tomatoes? I just went and checked that up.
I like the fact that you guessed me on it, like you second guessed me on that and fact checked it. I can't remember.
No, because I was shocked. I was like, because really?
Because, my dude, believe it or not, okay, spoiler into movie Mount Rushmore territory, we have a selection of a show that has me having to research such information.
Okay, I see where you got that. Well done. Well bloody remembered. All right, 30 years old, AJ. I'm hoping that I'm really hoping you've seen this one. I really hope so. If not, it's going to be a really short segment. God. But the name itself makes me go, yep, that feels 30. Because 30 is Weekend at Bernie's Part 2.
Yes, you are so lucky. You are so lucky. Because, my dude, I have not seen Weekend at Bernie's 1, but I have seen Weekend at Bernie's 2.
The floor is yours.
Because I'm hearing you saying Weekend and the image is there. My internet had a slight lag. And I'm like, please say two. I have seen Weekend at Bernie's 2. And it's actually something I had quite a lot of fun with on Sky Movies. You know, it is a throwback, because when's the last time I had a Sky subscription? But it's something that I remember watching a bucket load of times with my sister. Like, it's the story of a man who's passed away. Now, this is a bit sketchy to me, and I don't know how it happened that he's lasted for two films. But Bernie is dead, or in a coma, for better or worse.
Yeah. Right?
But he's the boss to these two guys, and they're meant to be partying at Bernie's. Now, what happens is, you can't be in Bernie's house without Bernie. What we have found out is that if you play, like put some headphones on, yes, kids, when you had the wires and they went over the head and there was a wire and plug it into a Walkman, what's a Walkman?
Go Google TDK. Come back to us next week. Right. When you do that, Bernie kind of comes to life and he's like a moving puppet, essentially. And that's what it is. It's just these guys trying to get away with a scam of partying at their boss's house while he's either dead or in a coma. And they've got certain ways of just making a puppet out of him. It sounds crazy as hell.
It's so bad.
Oh, I'm sketchy as hell because I've not seen it in forever. Oh, I trust me when I tell you, it's better than Tammy and the T-Rex. It is better than Tammy and the T-Rex.
I had fun with Weekend. Yeah, sure.
I know, but I'm saying when you talk about absolutely terrible stories, they are kind of on par. I'm just going with it. I've not had the opportunity of seeing Weekend at Bernie's 1. It's something I've always wanted to see because of the fun we had with Weekend at Bernie's 2. But again, it kind of sits in like Problem Child 2 territory with me, where I've had so much fun with Problem Child 2 when I was a bit disappointed by 1. And I think I've always been scared that Weekend at Bernie's 1 won't be as good as Weekend at Bernie's 2. I did have fun with it, though. I did have good fun with Weekend at Bernie's 2. So I am kind of happy, and it's given me a memory of, like, I need to go back and try and find those. So thank you. But 30 years
old. The only thing I'll add to everything you've just said. I have only ever seen Problem Child 3.
I've never seen...
Not good.
I would say do 1 then 2 because you'll really appreciate the magic of 2. Yeah,
sure. Sure.
2 was fun. I don't know if it will age badly now.
But that is it from Throwback Thursday this week, guys. Have you seen all of these classic movies? And which ones make you go WTF? Leave your thoughts and your comments below. And that also brings us to an end of another installment of Silver Screen News. As always, thank you so much for joining us. Please do be sure to like this video if you haven't already. We are also available in podcast format, so you can head on over to all your popular podcast platforms and just search for Silver Screen Dudes or Movie Mount Rushmore, and we will show up. And you can listen to us, whether it be on a long car ride, a jog or a run at the gym, whatever. If you want to listen to us and you can't watch us, we're available in audio format as well. We will be back next week, of course. But until then, my name is Nico Leroux.
I'm the one AJ, Anthony Jordan.
And we will see you guys next week. Until then, guys, see ya.